Triple M's Dead Set Legends podcast brought to you by Harvey Norman, the experts in soundbars, making it easier than ever before to find the right solution.
All right, the Uniqlo Australian Masters is on, and it's the opening two rounds have been played, and we've been kind enough to catch up with the Australian golfing superstar, Adam Scott. Adam, welcome to Dead Set Legends.
Hey, thank you, Dale. Cheers, mate.
Mate, let's get to the million-dollar question that everybody has told me to ask you since I was going to catch up with you. The flat stick and the new rule coming in the new year. Everybody says it's going to have the major impact on you because you've had the anchored or the broomstick over the last few years. What are you using this week and how do you think it will affect you?
Yeah, no, I'm using a short putter or shorter putter than I have been and a more traditional sense, I guess. But I've been using it for the last 4 or 5 weeks, and I've putted pretty well. And although I'm probably much more out of practice with it than most guys out here who have been doing it, I haven't used it for 4 or 5 years. I have, you know, used it pretty effectively in the past as well. And I think as far as an effect it's going to have on me, probably only a positive one, really. I think I'll be a better putter than I have been before, and that's exciting for me. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it. Sometimes it's nice to have a bit of a force change because you've got something new to work on.
Well, mate, we've got changes at Huntingdale and the Masters is back there. It's been on the rotation system. They've had a crack at improving their course to try and, I suppose, proof it against you guys, the pros, to a degree. How have you found them?
Yeah, I think they've done a really nice job with the few changes. It's pretty subtle. They've kept the character of the golf course, which is important. You know, it's a bit of an iconic course in Australia, holding the Masters all those years. It's great to be back there. But some strategic bunkering, we could say, and maybe just actually softening a couple of the greens, which was quite pleasing to see, taking some of the elephants out from underneath the greens. So they've actually not been too tough on us, and it's really, they've done some nice work here, and it's been a pleasure to play.
A couple of yellow jackets already, mate. Stiffed last year by Nick Cullen out of that bunker. Nick's not here. He's at European Q School. A chance to get that jacket again. And, mate, what do you do with your jackets? Because I know you bought your Green Masters one out for a little while there with your mates once you won that. So where are they and what do you do with them?
Yeah, I'd love to add one more jacket to the wardrobe this year. And I actually saw them. They're sitting at home in Queensland. They're hanging in the wardrobe. I saw them the other day. They're down there. You can't miss them.
Yeah, no.
they stand out in the wardrobe, the gold jacket.
Mate, so, perhaps you better get Uniqlo onto it to design yourself one that's just a little bit softer.
Yeah, just soften that, leave that to them. But it would be really nice to get in the mix. And I've had a couple close calls, a couple playoff losses at Huntingdale in the past, in the Masters, and it'd be really fantastic to go the distance this week, and especially as Uniqlo are presenting sponsor for the Masters.
Absolutely.
That'd be a really special week for me.
Mate, it must be nice to know that your own personal sponsor has stepped in, because we've had issues over the years with the Masters and its future, and they are having a massive push out of Asia, so any pressure to win, seeing that the boss is there watching?
Yeah, probably, but they're not showing it to me. Yeah, but it's really incredible that they've done that. And, you know, for me to see that kind of support they have for me and understand that this is an important event for Australian golf and what it means to me for them to step up to the plate is makes me really proud to represent Uniqlo.
Well, mate, on the Australian public love it when you come back because it creates a real buzz. In the last few years since you've been home, you've played some amazing golf. It's absolutely fantastic. This year's been a tough one, though. You've slipped, if I can say that, and what a nice way, nice feeling this is, slipped to about number 12 in the world. That must be a nice feeling in a sense, but at the same time, you got to the top, the pinnacle. Great to have Jason Day get there as well. It's a really hotly contested position at the moment, isn't it?
It is, and I think that's the way we're going to see it for a while. I think not just between Jason and Jordan. I think there are other guys, hopefully myself, who are going to be up there challenging. I think the standard of golf around that top 10, top 20 level is very, very high now. And anyone in that area has kind of got the potential to go on a run like Jordan or Jason and really step it up. But I just don't see anyone really running away with it and being that dominant number one like we saw with Tiger for 10 years or so, I think it's just pretty hotly contested, and I think that's going to provide us with some pretty exciting golf over the next year.
Absolutely. I reckon a real golden period coming up.
This is a Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, and we've been speaking with Adam Scott.
Just on Tiger, I would assume that the fear's gone in terms of what he had back in the day when he turned up. It was like, you know, you knew yourself, you had to play some amazing golf to get over him, whereas now it's like, well, Tiger's in the field, that's okay. He's got his own battles just like the rest of us.
It was a little bit like that this year. I mean, he's been riddled with injury, it seems, the last 4 or 5 years, and it's probably taken its toll on him. And, you know, your guess is as good as mine when he comes back and how he's going to come back this time. But, excuse me, he's incredible. He proves us wrong his whole career. And, you know, you can't doubt him for a minute, but it's going to be a long way back for it now.
Now, Adam, can I ask you this one? You play a game that requires gentlemanship, etiquette a lot of the time. What do you do that releases the pressure? Yeah. Because I would assume it's an enormous pressure cooker.
Yeah, if I can get in the water and get a wave,
yep,
and surf a little bit, that's what I'd really like to do. But that doesn't happen that often. And funnily, it certainly hasn't happened that often since I've become a dad.
Yeah, that does take up your time, doesn't it? Are you enjoying that?
I've heard stories about that, but they're true.
Yeah, mate. Mate, if I can offer you this, never say you babysit your own kids, because you never do that. They're yours and it's your job.
It's fantastic. It's been a great year, and both my wife and I are loving it.
Yeah, congratulations on becoming a dad. That is wonderful. Mate, there is a hell of a lot of work that goes into being number one in the world. Now, what's your normal day like or routine like when it comes to practice?
Yeah, it's at times it can be a grind. At times it's the all day sessions on the range, but generally speaking, when you've got things under control, it's about a 5 hour day, and then maybe a gym session at the end of that. But it's not more than that. You can't wear yourself into the ground, because you can easily fall in that trap standing on the range all the time, looking for that perfect swing, which doesn't exist. And the interesting thing that, you know, most people will never experience with golf is probably, you know, how mental it is, certainly under the pressure of playing the biggest events, and what that takes out of you, probably much more than the physical side of hitting balls or obviously walking a golf course, but the mental drain it has. And I think a good example of that was, you know, Jordan Spieth had an incredible run and played all these great events for most of the year, and then missed two cuts in the playoffs. And, you know, I'm not surprised. There's got to be a letdown. He's been playing in contention for 6 months, and that's taxing on you. And there's got to be a letdown at some point. But it's pretty good when you're 22, you just bounce right back and win another event.
Yeah, you get up and go, this is what I'm supposed to do. I was born to do this. Best pros to play with, and probably the ones that aren't the best to be paired up with for a round of 18 holes.
Yeah, I love playing with Ernie. I've loved playing with Ernie Els my whole career. He's fantastic to play with. I've always liked playing with Jose Maria Alathabal. I've never seen a guy grind so hard on a golf course. It's just... it makes you try harder out there, because he's working so hard. And I've loved playing with the Shark, because he's the Shark, and I looked up to him. And, you know, even still today, when you see him hit it, he's giving it a rip. It's fantastic. So I've loved that. And then, you know, really the slow players. I don't even need to know if I need to name names, but there are some pretty obvious ones out there. I think we need to pick up the pace a little bit.
Oh, very good. All right, mate, great to talk to you. All the best for this weekend, obviously Saturday and Sunday to come. Hopefully you got another gold jacket around you and go to the collection for number three. And I've saved this one on purpose for last, mate. Is it too soon for the Robert Allenby gags on tour?
No. I think they should get... They're all out there.
Excellent. I'm sure the boys had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, it was an entertaining year from Robert, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Hey, Scotty, thank you so much for your time. Last one, Uniqlo, obviously a big supporter of yours. You Yeah, the outfits you're wearing, obviously your sponsor gear, but you have a big decide in that these days, don't you? You've turned designer.
Yeah, no, I don't think I can quite take that credit, but they're certainly open for feedback, and some, you know, I think we've collaborated nicely and designed some nice stuff, so hopefully everyone gets out there and has a chance to see some of it.
Absolutely, mate. I can't wait to see you in action over the weekend, like we said. Again, so much, thank you so much for your time, and good luck with everything else.
Beauty, Dale. Thanks, mate.
Thanks,
good to be with you.
Ta, mate. Bye.
Cheers.
It's the Triple M Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Dale Lewis and Campbell Brown in the hot seats today, and a very special guest, the coach of the Australian cricket team, Darren Lehman. Boof, welcome to DSL.
Morning, boys. How are you both?
Mate, we are fine. Brownie's a little bit dusty. He had the Christmas party last night. We'll get to that in a moment. But, Boof, you must be happy. 1-0 up in the series. A few people suggesting it was a little bit boring in Perth, but you must be wrapped heading into Adelaide.
Yeah, it's been a really good series. I think we played well in Brisbane, and you know, both teams fought it out pretty well in Perth, to be perfectly honest. So, looking forward to the first day-night test match here in Adelaide, and it's a big game for both sides. So, you know, whilst we'd love to, you know, get results in each test match, I thought the Perth test match, you know, wicket was a little bit flat and balls weren't great and all those sorts of things, but, you know, it was an entertaining, you know, hard-fought draw from both sides.
Boof, there's going to be two confirmed changes from the side that played over in Perth. Obviously, Mitchell Johnson retiring and Uzi Khawaja doing his hammy. Who are the front runners at this stage to be getting the bag of green?
Well, Sean Marsh would definitely come in and bat at five. And
yep.
He's already said that. So that's an easy one for us. And, you know, that's a tough call on someone like Michael Klinger and Cameron Bancroft. So that was a tough call. But Sean gets another crack at it, and I'm sure he'll do well. And then it depends on whether we go with two spinners or the three quicks. So, yeah, you'd think Peter Siddle would be the front runner, but again, it really depends on the makeup and side when we have a look at the wicket, lads.
What are you expecting with the wicket, Boof? Like you said, a couple of flat ones early on. Adelaide notoriously a batsman's paradise with a bit of spin, but we've seen with the pink nut so far, especially in the Shield game, it can hoop around a bit.
Yeah, it can. So look, and it can spin, so it's a really tight call. They're leaving more grass on it now to make sure that it looks after the ball, and it played really well in the Shield game a few weeks ago here, so I expect a pretty highly entertaining cricket pitch, and you know, I think both sides will adapt really well. I think, you know, first 2 days, for example, sold out, which is, you know, fantastic for an Australian-New Zealand test match. So looking forward to that as well.
Boof, have you come up with any revenge or retribution yet? And for the listeners that aren't aware, one of the great interviews of all time on the plane coming from
yes.
Brisbane over to Perth, sound asleep and got absolutely stitched up by Peter Siddle, Mitch Marsh. And let's not forget Kate Hutchison, the media manager, and Adam Goldfinch as well, the cameraman. Surely that brain's just ticking over of yours trying to come up with something.
No, I've got it. I'm ready to go. I just want to wait for a while.
make them stew on it.
Yeah, they're quite nervous about it, which is fantastic. So, you know, I've got what I'm going to do to each one. It's fantastic. So, you know, we'll put it on the internet and make it go viral. There's no doubt about that. So they're nice and panicky at the moment.
Boof, is it true when you hit back on Twitter that you actually sold one of the boys' cars or put it for sale in Queensland when you were coach there?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so, you know, they don't know what they've got themselves in for, those four.
Yeah. And plus, mate, you've got a few days off now. You're home in Adelaide. Family wouldn't recognise you. You're probably plotting your next game.
Yeah, got plenty of time here in Adelaide at the moment to plot, so got a few contacts I can use there, so it'll be interesting.
Now, one thing I don't reckon he'll be doing, Louis, is going for a ride anytime soon. Tell the listeners a little bit about the ride you tried to do from home the other day in the mudslide.
Yeah, had a little accident, you know, lads, in the bike path going to the test match, so then had to you know, drag my sorry butt back up the road, and broken bike and broken shoulder and mud everywhere, and just slipped off a little mudslide in the path. So dented the ego more than anything, really, lads. And I was a little bit sore walking up the road with all this mud, and I'm sure people are going, what's happened to him?
Homeless man out for a bike ride. Hey, Boof, have you decided whether you're going to bus it or walk back to the hotel? We've had issues here in Adelaide with Alistair Clarkson. You got your statue there. You think you'll be safe going over the footbridge?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'll be fine, lads. Yeah, the footbridge will get me. But, that was an interesting episode.
More with the Australian coach, Boof Lehman, next on the Dead Set Legends. This is the Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman. We've been chatting with Boof Lehman. Can I go back to Stephen O'Keefe and whether you do play the two spinners? Not too many blokes in this country are known as pink ball specialists, but he is very good with it. I think, what's he got, 18 wickets at 18 in three games. Pretty handy with the pink nut.
He is, mate. He's bowled very well with it. Hence, you know, with Adelaide just waiting until we see the pitch and the conditions, he's a real chance to play. So for us, we just have to sum up what the best way is to get 20 wickets. You know, there's times when you can go with the three quicks, etc., and the all-rounder, but sometimes you've got to play with the two spinners. So we'll just have to sum it up. But he's got a fantastic record with the pink ball.
The Riverbank Stand, for those who don't know, city end of the new Adelaide Oval development. Boof, you've got tongues wagging nicely here, and I think it's very apt to Barry Nugget Reece. Those who don't know Nugget, you would have seen him on the TV. He's been an institution when it comes to Australian cricket, South Australian cricket. Throw footy in there, mate, and there is a suggestion from you that the very boringly named Riverbank Stand becomes the Nugget Reece Stand. I like it.
Yeah, I love it. I obviously love him, a bit biased, and at the end of the day, the people that make decisions will make that. So it's a really good talking point, and you know, he's been a legend of all sports around South Australia for a long period of time now. So, you know, whether it's the stand or the hill, I don't really mind. I just want him immortalised. In my eyes, he's been fantastic for, you know, football, the football codes, the cricket codes. You've got the football names on one side of, you know, the eastern side, and then the western stand, the member stand's got all the cricket. So it sort of mixes in quite well, I reckon.
Yeah, I like it. Were you surprised that Pup hit back so hard with his captain diaries? I mean, they lined him up and we're all surprised how hard they came with him even before he retired, but he certainly didn't miss him on the way out.
No, he's got him, hasn't he? Look, at the end of the day, look, they're big enough to sort that out.
Yeah.
You know, they're all great players and they have been, and you know, John Buchanan as a coach was around for a long period of time, so they're all going to have their different views, and that's part and parcel of the media, lads, as you well know. So I'm sure they're all big enough to sort that out.
Have you ever met Pup's dog? It seems like he's highly intelligent.
No, I haven't, lad. Yeah, I need to go meet him.
I'll tell you what, there'll be a few things, Brownie, for siring if he's still got his balls. Hey, Buffer, great to talk to you, mate. Everything ticking along nicely. How is the family time? Because, like you said, you're away more than 100 days a year. Did the wife recognise you when you came in? Everything all kosher?
Oh, no, she doesn't recognise me these days, hardly. So that's, you take her for dinner and work out what life's supposed to be about.
Oh, mate, fantastic stuff. You're doing a great job. We look forward to the third test, of course, history-breaking stuff with the pink ball and a night test match series. So good luck with that, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, boys.
Cheers, Buff.
There he is, the coach of the Australian cricket team. It's the Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman. Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Dale Lawson, Campbell Brown. Now our next guest, he's not in a good way, but his team is. Matty Wade, the Victorian skipper of the Sheffield Shield team, joins us now on the Dead Set Legends. Matty, welcome.
Hey, boys, how are we?
Good. Mate, we're good. Team travelling nicely. You, not so much. Broken, fractured collarbone, batting in the nets before the first morning of play last week against Western Australia.
Yeah, it wasn't ideal. I was just having a net before we went out and batted. About 5 minutes before we started batting, I managed to hit one into my collarbone, and I was pretty unlucky. I broke it about 10 years ago or so, and I had like a little cyst in there, so a hollow bit of bone, and it hit right on that spot and broke through it.
So it wasn't even from a good bumper from one of the bowlers. You just did it to yourself.
Nah, truth be told, I was playing a lap shot, which I probably shouldn't be playing in four-day cricket, and I lapped it straight into me. This would have been a bit of a smart ass.
Oh, no. Yeah, I would have went with either Cummins or Pattinson, mate, that got me.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't ideal, but oh well.
So straight in for surgery. What have they said? That they've pinned it, and do you think you'll be available for the first one day, which I think is on the 12th of January?
Yeah, I'll definitely be available for the first ODI. I'll hopefully come back either first or second Big Bash game. That's the advantage of getting it operated on. They put a plate in it, and then hopefully it's only 4 or 5 weeks maximum from there. Whereas if you let it heal naturally, kind of just hoping that it heals, and with that cyst there, we weren't 100% sure. So this way, I'll be back probably hopefully around the 20th of December. So plenty of time to get some cricket in before the one days.
Well, Wadey, the boys are in good form in the four-day format, on top of the ladder. Let's talk about this kid, Travis J. Dean. What an absolute sensation! Where has he come from, and how good can he be?
Yeah, he's a Werribee boy, so he played for Footscray a few years ago, to be honest. He only really just making his way in district cricket. He went okay a couple of years ago and then had a couple of breakout years in the last 2 years. So picked him off pre-season form. We knew that we're after an opening batter probably around his age because, Bucky Rogers retired. We have Bobby Quaney, so we're after someone to fit the role at his age that can play for 10 or 15 years of first-class cricket, hopefully. So way to run's got him picked, mate. He got 200 in a second 11 game before the start of the year, and we're always keen to play him before that. So when you pile on 200, the coach is pretty keen to get you in. So picked him, and then, yeah, what he's done since then has just been phenomenal. I've never seen anything like it. In the 10 years I've played, someone come in and straight away pick up first-class cricket the way he does, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, one of the greatest debuts of all time. I want to talk about your trip to Sydney the other week. What did you do to the SCG, my beloved turf up there, and to the New South Welshmen that got them so offside that, sure, you come home with the 6 points, but what a debacle that was.
Yeah, it was a nightmare, to be honest. I didn't. There was a bit of rain around. I didn't go out and have a look at the wicket or the ground before the day's play because there was rain. So the umpire's come and told me that it wasn't fit for playing. I went and had a look. It was like playing on Bondi Beach. It was just sand everywhere all over the square. And obviously, when the sand got wet, the top of the soil just started ripping apart. So we had about four or five blokes slip over in the first half an hour, and then another five after that. And then when Finchie and Bobby Corney went down and nearly did their knee, they decided the ground was unfit, but it was... I thought it was always unfit. They just chucked us out there to basically prove that the ground wasn't fit for play. And well, luckily we got out with no injuries, but it wasn't ideal.
Louis, there's a reason why I like this man. It was just a month ago that he got fined by Cricket Australia 70% of his match payment for code of behaviour. You got run out, Wadey, and you weren't too happy against South Australia. Can you tell the listeners maybe a little bit of what you had to say to cop this fine?
Yeah, I've been in a bit of trouble over the last couple of years, so I haven't got a great rap. So I just walked off the ground, and we're playing at Bankstown Oval, and there was about five people in the crowd. So any kind of language that you dropped echoed throughout the ground, and I wasn't saying there's anyone else apart from my partner that ran me out, Dan Christian. That was really good of him. So I a little swear word, and yeah, copped the fine again.
Jeez, you could. Dirk Wellham took a spectator's jaw out one day and hardly got fined, mate. That's stiff.
Yeah, I know. Listen to some of the stories from 10 or 15 years ago. Yes.
I hope Dan contributed to some of that fine as well, did he?
What's that, sorry?
I hope Dan contributed to some of that
fine. Yeah, no, of course he did. I've lost about 10K, I reckon, over the last couple of years. It's ridiculous. I just keep getting fined.
So no, you're just bringing down your taxable income. It's very clever, your accountant will tell you that. Now, let's talk about Sids and Justin Langer and JL. A little bit of altercation after the game from the weekend. Sids suggesting that the Vics were the only one chasing the result out there. And Langer hit back and said, hang on, we've got a young bunch of kids. We're trying to play against you guys, you superstars. We held our own and we're both in it to win it. Was Sids on the money or not?
I didn't see the last day, obviously, because I was in hospital. But I can only comment the days that I saw. Yeah, it was a bit of a stalemate towards the end of day two. I think they were nine down and they weren't taking a lot of runs. So they were trying to take time out of the game, which in the end worked for them because we ran out of time to win the game. But yeah, as JL said, their team is young and we're chasing points. But yeah, it wasn't ideal for spectators to be watching at the end of day two. That's before it was about an hour, I reckon. There was 20 runs scored. So that's the hard thing about the rule change that Cricket Australia have actually brought in. You got 100 overs to make as many runs as you can. And after that 100 overs, you either need to tee it up or declare. So, and if you don't, it kind of takes the sting out of the game and makes it hard of one team only chase results. So I can understand where he's coming from. But yeah, we would have liked to see it go a little bit harder, and then we had a little bit more time to make a result. MCG's a flat old wicket. If you don't have enough time, it's always going to be a draw.
Matty, how's the Mo coming along? You're doing Movember, and it's getting a little bit bushy there. Are you raising some money?
Yeah, I'm raising a bit of money. It's disgraceful, to be honest. It's thick. It's just an old, dirty slug, to be honest. Every photo that I've tweeted out or anything that has come back, I've been copping an absolute barrage about it. So it's not ideal, but it's... you know, we're doing it for a great cause. There's a lot of the boys are on board now, which is cool. We've got Sidzi and Finchy, Glenn Maxwell, Jimmy Paddo. So everyone's jumped behind Movember, which is awesome to raise awareness, obviously, for men's health and prostate cancer and men's health in general. So it's a cool cause I've been involved in for probably 7 or 8 years now after I had a bit of a run-in with testicular cancer when I was 16. So it's something I've been behind for a long time. And now it's good to see that a lot of people are buying in and raising a lot of money for men's health.
Wadey, you need to get the conditioner into that bad boy, that slug. Give it some love. Get some curl going on it. Do a bit of work. Go to a barber. Get some real treatment on it.
And maybe a bit of dye. Maybe get the tinge of red out of it. I might have to get the black dye in there.
Mate, it's all part of manscaping. And as for Maxi, he'd have to shave down to get a mo. He's that hairy.
He's a hairy man. You're right.
Mate, we wish you all the best in your recovery with that collarbone. Let's hope you are back in time for the big bash. Definitely back in time for the one days. Good luck with the Vics. Keep things rocking and rolling along nicely, mate. Thanks for your time.
Thanks very much, boys. Have a good show.
Go on, mate.
Matty Wade there, the captain of the Victorian Bush Rangers here on the Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Dale Lewis and Campbell Brown. For a former teammate of yours, but I'm 10 years older than you, Brownie. That's why I'm in that zone. Joining us now on the Dead Set Legends, thanks to Harvey Norman, Brad Sewell. Sewellie, welcome.
Hi, boys. How are we going?
G'day, Crush. How are you, mate?
Hello,
up in
Bear.
Sydney. It was 41 degrees yesterday. How's life?
Life's pretty good. Although, yeah, when we got in last yesterday afternoon, it was 41 on the beach. Too hot in Bondi to even sit there. It wasn't very nice at all, actually.
Let me tell you, Louis, there'd be no one loving that temperature more than Sully. Shirt would have been off before he got out of the tarmac, I reckon.
That's rich coming from you, Bear, of all people. I'm surprised you're actually wearing your shirt in there today.
I am.
It's OH&S. Make sure he has to wear one. You've got to put away that bear suit, I can tell you now, Sully. Hey, we'll get back to the poolside and the Coronas and also the Dick Togs. Let's talk about your new venture, the Aussie Footy College. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we're set to launch Feb 22. A college for football program with education component as well, targeting kids between the ages of 16 to 24 that can come in 3 days a week and get an education whilst focusing on a football program as well. Head coach Michael Osborne. It's coming together really well. We had an information night a couple of nights ago, Thursday night in North Melbourne. Had a heap of people come through, so it's been received pretty well.
What's the aim of this, Sully? I reckon it's a fantastic concept, and you've obviously got the backing of the government as well, and the fact you can get an education is magnificent. What are the aims sort of in the first year, and how many people do you think you'll get through?
So we're hoping to, we've got a site in North Melbourne, a sort of a warehouse that's kitted out with a fully functioning gym, a running track, classrooms as well. And we're expecting to get at least 50 through in this first year. And for these guys to come through and concentrate on their footy with an elite program, but at the same time go through, receive a diploma of business along with certificates as well, ensuring that once they've come out, having had a year or two with us, they can then step straight into work. There are sort of opportunities within that as well to do work experience, or equally go into university, second or third year of that as well.
Fantastic. Hey, Sully, if you need any help with anybody coming in saying or giving examples of what happens if you don't have Plan B, Brown Dog myself can come in because glowing examples of not really having thought that far ahead.
Don't be too harsh on yourself there, boys.
Sully is a man that thinks ahead, though. You're studying your MBA, is it, Sully? It's something that you're pretty keen on in life post-football business side of things.
Yeah, so I did doing that at the moment. It's 4 years part-time. I'll finish it next year. And it's certainly had moments, Brownie, as you know, where it can be quite a heavy workload. I did it for a couple of years whilst I was playing. It's some great people, but certainly hard work at the same time.
What about the Essendon Coaching Appointment Committee? You were on it, made the recommendation to the board that John Worsfold get the job. How did you find that process? And was he just a clear standout, or were there a few other guys that sort of were pretty close?
Yeah, it was a really interesting process. Interviewed a number of guys that that have been and will be exceptional senior coaches. But for Essendon at that sort of this point in time, Worsfold was the recommendation that we'd made, and hopefully that certainly in time proves to be the right one.
Sully, back to poolside. I mean, obviously, what are you doing, Sydney, when it's 42? I mean, like Brownie said, you love to get the rig out. You're on beach patrol, everything else. So what is the real reason you're up there at the moment?
No, it wasn't too much we could do. It was too hot yesterday. But I've got a friend's 30th up here this afternoon. So catch up with a few people and have a good afternoon. Then back to Melbourne tomorrow after that.
Sounds impressive, Brandog, doesn't it? You should be flying up maybe to join him.
I fly up there Monday, so I'm going to miss Sully, which isn't a bad thing for Sydney, let me tell you.
You'll lose some damage up here and have some fun, Brandy.
Hey, Sully, good luck with the college. I think it's, as Brandy said, a fantastic idea and just a real area, grey area at times with not enough. I mean, clubs are better now with education and having the Plan Bs, but just that ability, if you don't quite make it, you still get back and get something out of it. So good luck to you and Mickey Osborne with your venture.
No, absolutely. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
There he is. Anything else to add there, Brownie? He was playing pretty sheep. He's pretty close to the chest.
Yeah, no, he's a great man, Sully. And I thought he was on the match review panel this year as well. Him and Luke Ball, I thought that they did an exceptional job.
If only they'd been on it when you were playing, mate. Yeah, you might have got a lot less time.
That would have been a lot nice. Although, I might have got double.
We were rocked by a bit of news earlier today. The very sad passing of Red Cadeau, who was... broke down during the Melbourne Cup, has unfortunately had to be put down. And joining us now is Jason Richardson. Richo is part of Channel 7's racing team on his way up there to the Ballarat Cup. Richo, welcome to DSL.
Oh, great to be with a couple of dead set legends. And, Dale, I know what it's like to be sitting alongside that man, the brown dog. It has its ups. It certainly has its downs.
Yeah, you pinch yourself some days and you think life couldn't get any better than other days. You think, geez, what a set of cards. I'm just going to fold.
You've summed it up perfectly. You don't know where he's going to go to next. No. But in all seriousness, boys, I've just arrived here at Ballarat Cup Day, and I think everyone in racing's sad with the news that due to complications that Red Cadeau, the old warrior, had to be put down today. So it's so disappointing considering it's been roughly 3 weeks since the Melbourne Cup and we thought that he got through the absolute worst of it. And I really feel for all his connections, especially Robin Trevor Jones, who is and Steve, his track rider. Robin's basically lived with this horse over the last 6 years, and he's been there every single day nursing him while he recovered. And he was out of the woods, and trip to Paris was had to go towards the Japan Cup. So they actually jumped on a plane and headed over to Japan, and they would just be gutted with the news when they arrived in Japan that they've lost their great mate in Red Cadeau.
It really is devastating, because I think a lot of the non-racing people would have just presumed it was a bit of a feel-good story that they managed to save his life, and onwards and upwards he was going to be living out at Living Legends out there near the airport, and people just probably presumed he'd got through the worst of it, Richo.
Yeah, that's right. But, I mean, as we know, I mean, he basically, in human terms, broke his ankle. However, It's a lot more complicated in a horse because of their poor blood flow through their legs and the amount of pressure that those legs are under, that it was always going to be touch and go. He was never out of the woods, but he was in the best care possible, and they were really looking after him. And by all reports, he was going well. But now, due to complications, he's had to be euthanized, which is just devastating. What a horse he was. Oh. Keep in mind, He never won a race in Australia, yet he earned in excess of $5 million. It's unbelievable. He was going to go to the Living Legends as an Australian maiden, if you don't mind.
It's quite funny, isn't he? He really was the Australian people's favourite horse. And just tell the listeners, I mean, to run in one Melbourne Cup's great, two's, you know, pretty hard to do. He ran in five, and not only that, Richo, he came second on three separate occasions.
I know, that's amazing. And then they decided, well, I'll tell you what, we might actually bring him to the autumn, and because he seems to really love racing in Australia. So he raced in the Australian Cup and he was okay. And then he went up to Sydney, ran in the Queen Elizabeth, and guess where he came? Of course, second again. And then Ed Dunlop and his team decided to bring Trip to Paris out to Australia. So Ed's had another runner in one of our features, runs in the Caulfield Cup and runs second again. So you feel for Ed and Red Cadeau. Well, what he was, he just loved the firm tracks of Australia, and he loved the 2 miles. He was so successful. I mean, he was a better horse in overseas than he was in England. I mean, he won over in Hong Kong. His horse passport was a remarkable. He had to get extra pages inserted in because he'd race in Dubai, he'd race in Japan, he'd race in Hong Kong and in Australia. Remarkable animal and just so resilient. It's hard on horses to travel, but he looked like he absolutely loved it. So he'll have a special place in Melbourne Cup history and in everyone's heart.
Certainly will, Richo. One place you don't need a passport, that's Ballarat. But, gee, she's going to be a good day. Michelle Payne, Darren Weir, of course, they of the Melbourne Cup. It's a coming out party, isn't it? It's going to be enormous in the Rat.
That's right. The Rat's going to be going off. I've arrived here and the crowds are making their way in. It'll be on for young and old. In fact, imagine the brown dog. If we let the brown dog unleashed onto the out in the lawn.
I'd lock him up out at Dowling Forest. You'd put him on the outskirts of town and just close enough to let him in once a week, once a month.
What's your best tip, Richo, for today?
Probably Durandale in the second last, I reckon, looks well placed around $4. A lot of good judges think race number one, horse two, might be a good way of starting the day. And in the actual cup, God, it's impossible. Could a fairy tale happen? Couldn't Michelle Payne and Darren Weir win the cup with a horse that I think's been trained specifically for it in AXA? I know he's 9 years of age, but she looks well placed in that. So, I'm going to go with the fairy tale. I'm going with AXA.
Love it. Brownie will be the fairy godmother, all right? But he has to be home by midnight.
I don't believe in fairy tales.
We know what happens after that. Hey, Richo, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the Ballarat Cup. Thanks for your insight, Re-Red Cadeau. Jason Richardson there, part of Channel 7's Racing. It's the Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Dale Lewis and Campbell Brown in the hot seats today. And talking about hot seats, it doesn't get any hotter, Brownie. The penultimate round of the V8 supercars down at Phillip Island with the Super Sprint. And a man kind enough to share up some of his time is Garth Tander. Garth, welcome to DSL.
Morning, boys. How are we?
Mate, we are good. It is all happening. It's a little bit tight at the top. Frosty just getting a little bit nervous in the last few weeks. Anybody that gets close, he takes out. Chas Mostert, obviously, then he has tried to fix up Jamie Wincup. Have you been steering clear of the man who's trying to get his first championship win?
Yeah, look, it always gets a little tense as you get towards the end of the year. And no doubt there'll be a couple of more stories this weekend down here at Phillip Island. But yeah, look, it's tight at the top of the championship. It's actually quite a few interesting little subplots. I mean, Frosty's trying to win his first championship. Dave Reynolds, who's currently his teammate but won't be his teammate next year, is his closest challenger and, you know, he's got nothing to lose. And then Craig Lowndes, who hasn't won a championship for a while and driving for Holden, is trying to steal it back off the Ford bloke. So plenty of little subplots and no doubt there'll be a few more little dramas over the course of the next 48 hours.
Garth, there was plenty of rain yesterday around Melbourne. How did that affect things for you yesterday?
Yeah, pretty wet down here at Phillip Island, so no real dry running on the track at all yesterday. So with the forecast sort of being that, you know, it'll get better over the course of Saturday and then into Sunday, you know, running in the wet wasn't all that meaningful because it doesn't look like we'll race in it. So we got two laps in the dry yesterday out of 2 hours of running, so didn't really achieve much. We got another, there's another practice session prior to qualifying later on today, that'll give us an idea of where the cars are at. So, yeah, didn't do many laps, stayed out of the rain and early dinner.
Yeah, watched a bit of TV in the shed, I would have thought, there in the man cave. Garth, trying to impress you here, 18 of 51 pole sitters have won races at the island. What's wrong with being on pole down there?
Geez, I wouldn't have a clue. I didn't even know that stat until you rolled it out. Yeah, good stat.
Set legends, that's what you get.
wouldn't know. To be honest, I don't know. It's probably a unique stat. There's nothing weird about being on pole position here. It's probably just the way it's rolled out. It's actually one of the tracks that if you can get yourself in front, it's actually quite difficult to pass. So maybe the dirty side of the track on pole position might have something to do with it. I don't know.
Well, mate,
maybe because it's always wet down here. The inside's always wet and the outside's always dry.
You just ease up on the throttle in qualifying, mate. Get yourself back in the pack and just wait for the carnage to happen out in front. Now, why does it get so hard to win these things? Because, I mean, if you win a few of these, you go down in folklore in Australian sporting history. So is that why winner bottom is just having that little bit of trouble? And, I mean, we all looked at the time the other week where he drove out of the pits and, I mean, surely that person still doesn't work for him, does he? That's almost cost him. Because that was the moment really that put him amongst the poo.
Yeah, it was. He actually drove into the side of my car. So it wasn't actually Mark's fault. You can't see anything when you're leaving pit lane. And you can't see the cars. So you can't just whack the indicator on and merge.
That's what the elderly drivers tell us too, mate, when they run into shops.
Yeah, maybe they got the same dramas. But yeah, so look, they sort of had a bit of a wobble over the last couple of races and lost a few points in the championship lead. And yeah, look, the championships are hard to win because it's such a long year. I mean, we started this championship back at the end of February and we're still racing. We'll be racing into the early part of December. 15-odd races or 15-odd race weekends, lots of different race events, lots of different types of circuits. The endurance races where you're sharing the car with another driver, another co-driver. All the pits crew are involved with all the pit stops. I mean, there's so many things that can go wrong over the course of the year that can take you out of contention at any time. So, you know, it is hard to stitch a whole year together and be consistent over the entire year. So that's why championships are hard to win. But ultimately, they're very, very rewarding when you get them.
Mate, have you been happy with your year? Because, I mean, competitive again, but not too far off the pace at all, really.
Yeah, a bit up and down, I think. We started pretty strongly. Had a bit of a dull patch in the middle part of the year and now coming on strong again towards the end of the year. So we're just, you know, going into next year, we need to work on our consistency, you know, over a couple of different circuits. You know, it's hard to compare it to footy because I guess in footy, you know, you just work on your form over the whole year. Whereas for us, we've got to get the car, so, you know, to be suited to all different types of track. So it'll be like if, you know, you're playing footy on a square pitch one week and then a round pitch the next week. you know, you might be good on the round pitch, but not so good on the square pitch. That's for us. You know, we're not real great on the bumpy track.
What happens if you're not good on any pitch? That was the feedback I had most of my career.
Especially a cricket one.
Yeah, that's a bit too much bounce on the hard. It's just a consistency thing, and you just got to make sure that your car's pretty solid every weekend, and that's where it comes back to being consistent over the entire championship.
Mate, last one. So Winterbottom and Reynolds are going hard at it. Mm. Does the team, the head boss sort of get down the microphone and go, right, who's my favourite child here? I'm going to pick you, Frosty, or the other bloke that likes to pay fines.
Well, that'll be an interesting dilemma if it really comes down to it, because, you know, Frosty's sort of the forward golden hair boy and, you know, is part of that team for a long time, and is contracted to that team into the future, whereas Dave Reynolds, who's second and challenging, he's leaving at the end of the year. They've booted him out. So I would imagine if Dave's in a pretty strong position and then the boss gets on the radio and calls him up and tells him to move over, I reckon that radio call probably wouldn't make it through.
Sorry, I can't hear you.
What did you say? Breaking up.
Going to be exciting weekend down at the Island, Garth Tander. Thank you so much for your time, the Phillip Island Super Sprint. Good luck, mate.
No worries, boys. Cheers.
Cheers.
It's the Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Dale Lewis and Campbell Brown. What also is the exciting great man is the International Rules Series. And I say that with tongue firmly in cheek, my friend. 5:30 a.m. on 7, mate, tomorrow morning. Prime time for the boys. They're calling it the International Junket Series.
Come on,
you've
Lee.
Been on one of these. Yeah, I'm jealous. Don't worry about that. I've looked at all the photos on Instagram and on Twitter, and the boys just cruising around Manhattan on a trip of a lifetime, basically. And they've finally got across to Ireland. So what is this trip like, mate?
Oh, it's a fantastic trip. I remember I went in 2006, and that was the infamous year that Fev ended up getting sent home. But we did all sorts of cultural things. We stayed at a castle, a medieval castle. We met the Irish Prime Minister. We went to the Galway races. And for someone that is so passionate about racing like I am, I love that experience, especially when there was an old GAA, Gaelic Association representative, that took us and hosted us for the day. Mm-hmm. And he tipped us 6 of 8 winners. And he didn't just tip them, but he told us with absolute certainty that these horses were going to win. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what's going on with the Irish racing scene. But
was he dressed in green, had a little red ginger beard and about 4 foot high?
But look, 80,000 people at Croke Park representing your country. When you stand there, you link arms and the national anthem actually goes and you sing that. It's a pretty special moment. It's one of my more fond memories. And it is a junket, but I think the only way that the AFL could have got the quality of players to perform this year was to give them an added incentive. And you've got to remember, it's the middle of their holidays. They don't get paid to do that. So they get paid in other ways, to obviously go over to New York, take a partner or a plus one. And, you know, they went over in Madison Square Garden. They saw the Cavs play. They saw Tom Brady play the Jets. And it was a pretty pretty good trip. And I did everything, Louis, I possibly could to try and get on this trip. I rang Clarko.
Well, I just heard you talk about the plus ones. And I thought, geez, there's half a dozen phone calls. 6 Hawthorn teammates are in that trip. Surely you could have got in there, even dressed in a skirt, to get across the line.
There was a new role that I was trying to invent called the chef de partie.
Oh, the chef de mission.
I tried the water boy, the social coordinator, even offered to be a masseur. Clarko didn't want a bar of it, but everyone else seems to have got on the trip.
Well, you weren't the cultural attaché last time. That was Fev. That's not your fault. Trade relations broke down. Well, you were
exactly
going to be
right,
okay.
But see, I was rooming with him at the time, so I sort of got tarred with that.
You should have went down this path. You should have gone as the game day analyst, because there's one test match and one test match only. I had to have a laugh when I saw this. Cam Bruce, an assistant coach at Hawthorn, added to the International Rules Series because they needed a game day analyst in a one-off test of Gaelic football. Because as I understand it, Alistair Clarkson, Ross Lyon and Chris Scott, well, they got 5 premierships between them and everything else, couldn't handle the match day activity, and they needed somebody else to keep an eye on the game so they knew what was happening out there. Fair dinkum.
Yeah, well, there's Bruce. He's got 365 days to get that analysis spot on until next year's series.
Oh, fair dinkum, mate. By the way, how did you go back in that series? What I remember most is a lot of highlights of you practicing your tackling.
We lost the first game in Galway, and we came out at Croke Park, and we needed to win by a certain margin, and that was the day that Barry Hall went absolutely crazy. Oh. Ran through his own teammate in Ty Kennelly, who, can I just say, Ty Kennelly has jumped ships and he's joined the Australian side.
That's, he's the interpreter.
Oh, That's sacrilege. Oh, he won't be leaving Ireland alive, I wouldn't have thought. Ty,
no, they should string him up. That is treason.
We won the series and we won the fights. And Nicky Brennan, the president of the GAA, almost cancelled the series forever.
Beautiful, Brownie. Thank you for that lovely insight, mate. Brownie and Louie, Triple M's Dead Set Legends. Thanks to Harvey Norman. Brown Dog Sport lost one of its great ones during the week. Jonah Lomu, the All Black superstar, just captured the world's imagination when he burst onto the scene and just rampaging, try-scoring machine. Massive, massive unit, 115, 117 kilos. And as a lot of people described him, 115-kilo monster in ballet shoes. That's how apt he was on his feet. It was enormous, mate. Rocked me. How'd you find it when you found the news?
Oh, it was devastating. What probably caught me by surprise so much was that he was only 40 years of age, and we saw him burst onto the scene probably back in 95 in that World Cup.
Yep.
And he hasn't been playing for a long time, and I thought he was in his 50s, to be honest. So I was really shocked and saddened, because anyone who's that good, I mean, he was a genetic freak. Yeah. And anyone that's that good and revolutionised the game of rugby, really, didn't he?
Yeah, well, diagnosed, I think, in about 97, 98 with that kidney disease. Had an operation, I think, 05, 06 that didn't work, the transplant, and was really just hoping. He was always on a limited time frame.
Yeah.
And one of his great quotes was hoping to see his boys 21st. Now, they're only kids, and I think they're 6 and 4 or 7 and 5. And then he kept just bringing it down, hoped to get to their 18s. And then remarkably, there was a photo at him at the airport home from Dubai just after the World Cup. Looked good. And then the next morning, the news came through. So it was really, really sad. But you found something on Twitter from over across the ditch that's really intriguing about his sporting career.
Yeah, absolutely. A New Zealand reporter dug into the archives of his high school track and field record, Louis. Now, you've got to have a listen to this. He was the champion at his school, and these records, probably a lot of them won't be broken, at the 100 metre sprint, the 100 metres hurdles, the 200 metres, the 400 metres.
Yep.
Wasn't so good at the 800 and 1500. He was purely short twitch.
Yeah,
but
fast twitch,
the discus, the shot put, the javelin, the
long
jump, the high jump, and the triple jump. He holds the record at the school. So that just goes to show you, at a young age, he was just an animal.
Any of those were in your repertoire?
Probably just the 100-metre sprint. After that, just I was out of breath.
Speed. I was lucky enough to catch up with Peter Fitzsimons, former Wallaby author, social commentator, Republican campaigner, whatever you want to call Pete these days. He covered that World Cup you spoke of for the Sydney Morning Herald. Had a couple of great stories to tell. Here's the first one, and this is about one of those Lomu tries, Brown Dog, where no one could stop him.
The most stunning try he ever scored was semi-final of 95 against England. He got the ball 30 seconds in. He shimmied, he shook, he jived, he jagged, he got through, he knocked over 5 Englishmen, and finally there was one little Englishman. His name was Mike Catt, the fullback, who with extraordinary courage threw himself at Lomu and somehow got tangled in the wheels of the locomotive. And he came out the other side, and all he could do was grab onto Lomu's shorts. Lomu ran the next 20 yards dragging this poor bastard to
I love that story. Oh, I can remember that image as well. Then he softened things up and tells us about his favourite one.
My favourite story of Lomu. So I covered for the Sydney Morning Herald. I covered seven All Black matches in the 95 World Cup. So I saw him the whole way through. And the night before the final, I was chatting to the All Black captain, Sean Fitzpatrick. And the subject turns to Jonah. Sean brings from his pocket a fax he's just received from an eight-year-old boy living on a farm just outside of Christchurch. And he shows me the fax. And in this childish scrawl, it reads, "Dear All Blacks, remember, rugby is a team game.
Wow.
All 14 of you, pass the ball to Jonah."
Oh, you love that, Brownie. You love that. May the great man rest in peace. There will be such an outpouring of emotion when he's laid to rest over there in New Zealand. So to all his family and friends, we wish them the best. It is the Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman. It's Brownie and Louie on Triple M.
Triple M's Dead Set Legends podcast brought to you by Harvey Norman, the experts in soundbars, making it easier than ever before to find the right solution.